all the details, but we found that there were, that you could tune to this with a variable condenser, and it was much more dependable because resistances, as you know, will age, and normal resistances are, if you buy the conventional type, the normal ones are 20% plus or minus.
Yes.
And the better grade, the silver band, are 10%, and the better grade still 5% are gold band, and so on. Well, most people use the cheap ones, and that's where they got into trouble. We got into it, and I was using variable condensers. And then I built up an instrument breadboard style, spread out, connected all up together, and I discovered that when I set the instrument up on my dining room table in the east side of the room, that in the morning when the sun came streaming in on the apparatus, it wouldn't work at all. I won't go into all the details, but that evening and after dark, it would work. So that gave me the idea that light was involved. So then I conceived the idea of possibly refracting the energy, and lo and behold, I found, this is basic, I found that the energy would refract through a prism, and the angle was directly proportional to the contents of the nucleus. And that's the basis of FAPS in three countries. And it's that feature that is possible to build, if it's built by a very fine refinement, very careful construction, it's possible to tune in to the difference between two elements of the same total number of particles in the nucleus, one isotope of one of them having one more proton, one less neutron than the other one. Now, we can differentiate that close.
That's excellent, yes.
Yeah. Well, now, that's the what we call our industrial-type analyzer. It uses a prism, refracting the energy through the prism. But the angle of incidence, the angle of the prism, and the angle of refraction are all related. And the paper, I sent you a copy of that 1954 paper, didn't I?
On eloptic radiation?
Yes.
Yes, sir, you did.
All right, you find a great deal of information in there on the subject we're talking about.
I have read all of it, yes.
Yeah. So that is the feature that I would suggest that might possibly work out.
I think
I have two or three irons in the fire, and I've been searching for years to find the right person to get into this thing. I'm 78 next birthday, and I've spent 45, 50 years on this thing, and I'm getting a little tired, and I want somebody to get into it who doesn't have to make a dollar out of it, but who would have it like a challenge, something worthwhile. And so I'm looking for somebody who has an independent fortune, who's a younger man, a middle-aged, who isn't tied into some time-taking activity, and who could get into this thing and take over and make the right contacts and come up with the necessary money to finance it and build this apparatus properly. And I would not sell an instrument, but I would lease it like IBM and others do. And I would lease an instrument and an operator, trained operator. I have been through the idea of building instruments for doctors. I've done it. I've built hundreds of them, sold them, until I was put out of business by the AMA and the Griffith Drug.
Yes.
Years ago, I'm from back in 1951. Anyhow, I know that it has to be done. I'm looking for somebody who can take it on and carry it on from where we've carried it and give me an opportunity to do some further research. So that's why I'm not building instruments, and I just thought you ought to know. I realize that you need help, but I'm not sure, as I said earlier, whether this would help you in measuring. Because I don't know at the moment how I would go about tuning in to gravity fields. I do know this, that electric energy flows on magnetic energy.
I beg your pardon. Could you speak louder, please, sir?
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Electric energy flows on magnetic lines. And it doesn't like choking effect, too many turns, but it will flow apparently on, to go right through a transformer, through the magnetic effect. So it has quite an affinity for magnetic lines. And we can take an ordinary permanent magnet and divert this energy and manipulate it, just almost like you can take a magnet and manipulate a magnet with another magnetic field by blowing it around, attracting or repelling it. So there is some relationship there, but it's more a relationship of, shall I say, conductivity?
Yes.
Or either opposed or augmented.
Mm-hmm.
We can tune with magnets, believe it or not. Anyhow.
Okay.
I just don't know.
Well, the only way I would know to do would be to try and see. I definitely think there would be some
research to be done. I'll put it that way.
Yes.
And we haven't done it in the field in which you're engaged.
Right. I would like to pursue it along this line, so you know.
Well, I have three engagements this month that may develop into something.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, I don't want to jeopardize that situation by publicizing. It isn't a matter of too much secrecy. A lot of it's already been divulged, but it's a way that I don't think people can use it. Like that article in 1954, and also the patent. But study that 1954 idea, and remember that the prisms don't want to be great, big, massive things. The ones that I built very successfully were little, very precise built wedges of around 20, 25 degree angle of prism. That were roughly a half a 5/8 surface in inches, a half inch by 5/8, which is very small. And what I did was to buy from Edmund Salvage. You know who they are?
Yes, Edmund Scientific.
Well, it is
right
now.
Yeah.
But at the end of the First World War, when I was playing with this or shortly thereafter, they had bought up a lot of rangefinder optical equipment. And these wedges were used in rangefinders. They were ultra-precision built. And that's what I used. And I bought all they had.
Plain old house.
Didn't get any more.
Yeah.
So I built at the time 10 such instruments.
Yes.
And that's how we got into this. So I'll say this. You don't need a great big massive a 3 or 4 inch prism. You need just a little bit of a thing, but it wants to be polished precisely because irregularities in either surface will throw graduations off. And if you will look at that other article, you'll find a rather smooth curve between the various isotopes of titanium on up through nickel or copper, I think it is. They're about six elements. And study that thing and you'll see there's some irregularities down at the low end in titanium, and I really believe that they're the result of microscopic scratches on the prism that threw it off.
Quite possibly so, yes.
Yeah. That might give you something to work with. It's going to be a tricky job to build, and yet it can be done. And for the electrode, the electrode emitting the energy and the electrode picking up the energy, my electrodes were 1/2 mil thick.
Were they foil type?
I used foil blocked in between two blocks of Bakelite, polished on the surface, and examined under a microscope so that you could get an extremely thin electrode, but mechanically stable. That's how I did it.
Was this what, black Bakelite or?
Yeah, black Bakelite. Yeah, it works very well as an insulator. It's one of the best insulators we've found.
Just plain black Bakelite. So then
And incidentally,
you're radiating.
Instead of trying to use a point, we used a line.
Right.
You know what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
We use a vertical line of about 1/4 inch long up and down, so that we only had an alignment in one plane rather than in planes at right angles.
Yes.
You try to line up 2 points to emit energy through a prism and then pick it up at the other end, and you really got a problem. But if you make each 1/4 inch, as long as they overlap a little bit, they can be out of the line quite a long ways.
Oh, yes.
Follow
quite, Yes.
Okay. Now, that's what we did. And the whole thing is in an absolute leg-tight box.
Mm-hmm.
The emitting electrode and the up to the slit and to the surface of the prism. And that's the only place that light can get to.
What material?
And we have the whole thing enclosed in a medium light. I mean, well, it isn't optically perfect light type. The other first one is, the first part.
Yes.
But the rest of it is not, well, it has a cover on it, and it's in a box, an instrument case, that's painted black on the inside with no apertures for any great amount of light to go in. I don't want to say that a film put inside wouldn't be exposed, but it's pretty darn
yes,
close to light type.
What material was your slit made out of?
The slit was also made of a bakelite, and I used a milling machine to prepare some 32nd inch thick. I think there were 32nd or no, maybe 16th inch pieces of bakelite sheet, cut in little tiny pieces, and they were ground wedge shaped or machine wedge shaped, and ground so that the slit was again 1/2 mil thickness. And I got that by, instead of trying to cut a slit in something, you take two wedge-shaped pieces, separate them by a piece of foil, glue them onto a little flat piece of bakelite with an 1/8 inch diameter hole in it, and when the glue has set, then you remove the foil, and you have a slit that's 1/2 mil in thickness. That's the way I did that. I'm telling you the result of several years of experimentation to try to get it right.
I sure so, yes.
Yeah. So it's a little problem to build these things.
Yes.
If we were down in Florida and you were to come down there, I could show you some of the devices. But I don't have them up here. I didn't bring that sort of thing with me. I have one analyzer with prisms in it, but it's all put together and doesn't lend itself to being taken apart.
Well, I think this type of discussion is certainly helping me very much. And
well, it'll give you some thoughts.
As far as your pickup coil is concerned,
nothing critical about that at all.
Uh-huh.
Now, amplifier...
Does it need to be insulated?
I'll tell you this. We use a 3-stage tube amplifier.
Yes.
Transistors are not applicable in this particular work for other reasons. But if you put one cycle into the input into the grid, what comes out of the plate is 180 degrees from that, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, so an odd tube, one tube would give you a reversal. You use two tubes and it'll bring it back in phase.
Right.
Use three tubes and it takes it out again.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, and way back in the early days, I thought I needed a lot of electromagnetic amplification, such as radio amplification, so I used three tubes. And lo and behold, I found that it worked, and I've stuck with it ever since. Now, what we used in the beginning most successfully were two 6SJ7 GTs. And by the way, 6J7 metal tubes won't work. Don't ask me why.
Okay.
Do you use
tube shields?
With the same guts in it, won't work where the glass will.
Do you use tube shields?
And then we use the 6C5, which is a metal tube, as the output. There again, I don't know why. It just did. And we stuck with it. Now, since that time, we found that 9001s came closest to duplicating the work of the others. And so the last amplifiers that I've built are then using 3 9001 glass miniature tubes. You acquainted with them?
Yes, I'm familiar with them.
Now, the 6AU6 is similar, but it has a greater current capacity than the 9001. But the 6AU6, you take 10 tubes and two of them will work and the others won't. Don't ask me why. Same apparent mechanical stability and spacing and so on, but some peculiar characteristics, 6AU6s are not dependable. But the 9001 almost without exception, we've had good results. Now, you know the acorn tubes.
Yes.
We tried those. They worked beautifully, but they were very awkward to handle.
Do you use tube shields?
Pardon?
Do you use conventional tube shields on the tube?
I found that the best shielding, and we're getting into, are you acquainted with Wilhelm Reich's work?
No.
Huh?
Wilhelm Reich?
Yes.
I think not, no.
You think not?
No.
Well, that's another story. But he found that alternate layers of conducting and insulating material, not as a condenser, he called it an accumulator.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found that a tube shield consisting of metal foil separate on a layer of cardboard made the best shield. And I think there's a right accumulator effect there because a single metal sheet of copper didn't work so well.
Mm-hmm.
Little details.
You have the foil.
You see, these are the reasons why
it's
so difficult to explain why you build things in a certain way, not in another way.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I've given you something to think about.
You have the foil inside of the cardboard or the cardboard inside of the foil?
I think it's both. The foil inside and out.
Okay. Okay. I've got you.
That's why you have the glass of the tube, then a foil, then a cardboard, and then the foil, so you have the equivalent of the two-stage accumulator.
Mm-hmm. Is this
dealing or something else, you know?
Mm-hmm. Is this amplifier conventional in every other way? As far as power supply?
I found 125 volts on the plate is enough.
DC?
I use raw AC.
You do use raw AC?
Right.
Does that matter?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a carrier.
Okay.
That's all it is a carrier.
All right. And this other is a modulation of that carrier.
I tried to look at it that way, but I
you can
run into some things that seem to negate that thought, but generally speaking, that's a pretty good way to believe it.
Yeah, okay. Are the tubes biased or bypassed?
Only to control plate current.
Okay.
You can use a pretty good-sized grid resistor no cathode bias, or you can use cathode bias bypassed by a little 001 or 002 MF condenser.
Mm-hmm.
Very small, low voltage, tiny thing.
Can you use RC coupling, you think?
No. Transformer coupling, about 1 to 2 ratio, and I use about anything from 20 to 100 turns on the primary, up to 50 turns on the primary and about 100 turns on the secondary, separated with insulation on, a quarter-inch tube. I just take quarter-inch Bakelite tubing and wind my primary coil on it. I drill some holes in the ends of the tube. Take a tube an inch or an inch and eighth long and drill holes through to anchor the wires.
Mm-hmm.
And drill two sets of holes at right angles to each other on each end. You've got four holes at each end.
Mm-hmm.
You start out with the primary and wind that wire through that hole a couple of times and that anchors it. Then you wind your coil and run the other end through a set of holes at the opposite end in line.
Mm-hmm.
Then you insulate with your insulation and then run your secondary coil on top of that through the other set of holes. You follow me?
Mm-hmm. You wind it over the top of it.
That way you, and wind them all like, don't change the direction.
Okay.
Because you'll change the phasing.
So you do put one layer down and then wind another solenoid layer.
Put the primary down first, then a layer of insulation, and then the secondary on top of it.
What
and I use different size wire in order to have the coils about the same length.
What type of insulation do you put between them?
Well, my secondary, I used enamel. On the primary, it was cotton enamel, or silk enamel, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just...
It's
just...
26 or 8, and maybe 30... Oh, golly, I don't remember. But look it up in the table, where you can get somewhere around 100 turns per inch, something like that, on the one coil, and the other one about 50 turns. It's not critical.
These are then more or less close wound coils.
They're close wound coils.
Using just.
But the main thing is make them all alike and connect them alike.
Right.
Don't reverse connections because you reverse phasing.
Okay. One other small point. Do you just use regular enameled wire, though, without worrying about.
I use enameled wire on the secondary, the fine layer.
Right.
And because I had it.
Okay.
And I used some enameled silk on the primary because it spaced it out a little more in order for a small wire. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bigger diameter, effective diameter, and I could get about 50 turns in an inch on that one and about 100 turns per inch on the other.
The insulation properties aren't important there, though.
What's that?
The insulation properties aren't important.
There's no voltage mount, they think.
Okay.
And I use ordinary letterhead paper, about two layers between the two coils.
Okay.
It's nothing critical.
Right.
But that, again, wants to be taped up, and then I put those in a little sheet of tubes. I just use a little aluminum, thin aluminum tubing.
Okay.
About an inch and a half long, fastened to the chassis, and stick my coils down in those so that they're shielded.
And shield it. You mentioned several types of outputs.
Use three coils. You can use RC input from the tuning circuit into the first grid.
Okay.
The coupling coil between the first and second, another coupling coil between the second and third tubes, and a coupling coil in the plate output.
Yes, okay.
Now, for analyzing purposes, that is necessary. You can use RC. But for treating purposes, the funny thing, an RC circuit, which electronically is perfectly all right, will not work.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get the effect.
But for my purposes, RC would be all right, you think, on the output?
I don't know.
Well, okay, I'll not take the chance.
I wouldn't.
No, I'm not going to.
I work on the theory that
don't throw any more
unknowns in the equation than you have to.
Heavens no, don't argue with success.
Yeah.
Okay, and you did use raw AC on...
I used raw AC.
On all of that. Okay. Now, you mentioned in your patent there two types of output detectors. One was a coil type, and one was a plate.
I can hardly hear you.
I say in your patent, you mentioned two different types of output detectors that you used. One was a plate covered with plastic, and the other was a coil covered with plastic.
No.
Okay.
That's a little misunderstanding there. I used about a 7-turn coil, a couple of 3 inches in diameter, embedded in a groove that I turned on the lathe in an 8-inch thick layer of bakelite, black bakelite.
Mm-hmm.
And the groove is cut through from one side only, but not quite all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And the coil embedded in that, the terminal brought out. Then I fastened down onto that a sheet of black plexiglass for the rubbing surface. There again, you know what your autonomic nervous system is.
Right.
Pendulums and this apparatus and all the other is a means of your autonomic nervous system reacting to the elaptic energy to give you a physical stimulus. And that's what it amounts to. But everybody can't do it. And some people, the reaction on the rubbing plate, I'll call it, the detector plate, because some say it makes it sticky, others say it makes the surface feel pebbly, and one described this very well, said, feel like somebody spilled some orange juice on it and let it dry. Well, that's a gumminess. And if that's when the energy comes through, that's what it feels like. But when it isn't coming through, it feels slick. And there again, everybody can't operate.
Is there any mental function required, like some of these articles imply?
I didn't get that.
Is there any mental function, like some of these articles imply, that you read on it?
Some of those crazy instruments that John Campbell talked about, and stay away from them. They're psychic devices that they really depend very little on the instrument itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's for it's like a pendulum or something to convert the psychic energy into mechanical energy.
Yeah.
And the more sensitive an individual is, the more results you'll get with that type of device, but you can't depend a damn bit on it. Don't bother them.
Okay, fine. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. A lot of people have wasted their efforts on it.
Yeah. So then, as far as the overall rest of the circuitry, I can follow what's in the patent.
Too far, too bad. The diagram in the
Patent. Right.
You can build a medical instrument by using the variable connectors, and it'll work.
Mm-hmm.
Because it works on the basis of bringing two the total results rather than.
Beg your pardon. Could you say that again, please, sir?
If you're going to do atomic analyzing, or you want to work on the various isotopes, you want to break them up onto their components.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you're working on liver, mm-hmm. You don't give a damn about the copper and the
right.
and the mm-hmm. hydrogen and oxygen and carbon and nitrogen and what have you that's mm-hmm. in the liver. You want to work on the total component.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Yes.
Well, the variable condensers work beautifully on the total result, but the prism will break everything down into its individual components.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to do anything, why, that's the thing you want to use.
Is the prism.
Yeah. And
would you leave the variable condensers
yes.
out?
Yes. You set them at zero until you get the other two, and then you can augment it a little bit with your variable condensers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in a way, it's really a double-tuning system.
Mm-hmm. So you could just leave it out if...
Can't hear you.
You could just leave the condensers out, or...
Yes, you can. It would work.
Be better
because,
to leave it.
When we're tuning with the prism, we just set the condensers mm-hmm. at zero.
Which is what, fully matched, or...?
No, zero is all the way out.
Okay.
100 is fully matched.
I've got you covered now. So that would, in this diagram, then, you have one of the condensers in parallel with the...
That is not essential.
Oh.
You can run from the pickup electrode to the... I use what we call a well. I take for our work, I use a 2-inch Pyrex speaker
uh-huh.
with about 7 turns of wire spaced wrapped around it.
Mm-hmm.
And one side's grounded, one end's grounded, and the other end is the pickup for the hot lead.
Right.
That hot lead can go directly into the input of the prism, or it can go to one of the two variable condensers, or
mm-hmm.
both.
Mm-hmm.
And the other condenser can be in series. Now, there again, when you put two condensers in series, you expect if you increase one, you'd have to decrease the other to maintain the same frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
They work completely independent of each other when they're hooked in series. No relationship.
Do you mind if I go over that point again with you? Let me describe what I think you said. You have the bottom side of the coil grounded, okay?
One end, yes.
Yes. And then the other end...
Is the hot lead.
Is what I'll call, okay, the hot lead. And the hot lead goes...
To the input.
To the input to the prism.
To the prism.
And it also goes to...
And it can also go to one side of one of the condensers.
All right. And then the other condensers...
are in series.
The other condenser...
All the way it's hooked up in the... And that's all right, too.
Uh-huh.
And then your output of the prism... Forget about the condenser for the moment. The
all
output
right.
of the prism is your... After that's what comes out after it's tuned.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That's the output of the tuning system.
Right.
And then you go from there to the... grid of the amplifier.
Yes.
Of the input stage.
Right.
And the output of the last two goes to a coupling transformer to the rubbing plate coil,
mm-hmm.
the other side of which is grounded.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think that's shown in the drawing.
Yes.
It's been
okay.
so long since I looked at it, I just check it from memory.
Right. And then one of the condensers, where you came off the hot side of the coil, you went to the condenser, then you go to another condenser in series with it, and then through a variable resistor, and then the ground.
Now, that variable resistor is, in the very early days, it was an excellent quantity measuring device.
An excellent what, sir?
Because if you put enough resistance in, you block out the energy, and the amount of resistance that it took was an index